This is the MCrit Podcast, where we bring upstairs care downstairs. Hello, and welcome to the MCrit Podcast. This is Scott Weingart, coming to you from New York City, where it is snowing like mad. So today, we're going to go a little more in depth in the sedation and analgesia of the intubated patient. Now, I did a little rant on this. It was brief. It was just an excerpt from a lecture I gave at a conference. I put it up there, and that was very preliminary. I'm going to go more in depth today. And there's been some new research we got to talk about. Good stuff. In addition, and we might have to do a podcast a little sooner than we planned, there was an enormous article published in the JAMA on early goal-directed therapy and whether we really need central venous oxygen saturation. If you haven't read it yet, you should be reading it. I'll put the link in the show notes, but we got to talk about this. This is some really, really incredible stuff. All right, so that'll be coming up in probably a week or so. Before we get started, I just wanted to tell you about a couple new things on the website. And the website, of course, is at blog.mcrit.org. First of all, thanks to my friend Phil Andrus, there is now a link to place topic suggestions for future podcasts. You'll see that in the sidebar. Just click on there. You can either add new ones or vote for ones that are already there if you like what you see. Then, there's a gentleman out in New Mexico named Darren Broud, and he is an airway maven. He's been doing a lot of good stuff, and in fact, we're going to hopefully feature one of his videos in the upcoming podcast on cricothyrotomy. Darren heard the podcast. He liked it. He sent me a copy of his book, which is Rapid Sequence Intubation and Rapid Sequence Airway. And this is a really great book. I've read it. I like it. It's got some ingenuitive stuff, and it really keeps things at a level that's just the clinically relevant stuff you need for airway management, both for residents, attendings, and paramedics. And I think this is a fantastic book if you are a pre-hospital professional and you just really want to go beyond the paramedic course. Really good stuff. I'm going to be giving away a copy of this book. All you have to do is you have to go to the website and you have to add yourself to the email newsletter. And I'm going to choose right before the next podcast from the list of folks who are on that list, and we'll send you out the book. Darren Broud's book, Rapid Sequence Intubation, Rapid Sequence Airway. And there's no spam there. I'm not selling your names to anyone. I promise you that is not the MCrit way. All right, let's get started with the show. So on this prior rant, and you could go back and listen if you like, but I'm going to cover most of that stuff now. We said that it's a big problem when you walk into most EDs and you see these patients intubated and they've received maybe a slug of Ativan or some Valium, and that's it. Or maybe they're on a propofol drip, and that's their only part of their sedation package. Or worse, they got that, they were still moving around, so people decided to paralyze these patients. This is not good. This is really, really cruel to our patients, and it's got to stop. Now, there was just an article published in The Lancet on a no sedation strategy for post-intubation patients. No sedation. What they did is they gave them pain control. They all got morphine, and one group got benzodiazepines. The other group got nothing. And the group that got nothing had less days on the ventilator, which makes sense because when you think about it, you really don't need sedation. Sedation is the bonus. What you need is you need analgesia. Now, why do you need analgesia? Well, you take these guys, and what you're essentially doing is you're sticking a tube in the back of their throats. Now, if you just open up your mouth right now and stick your fingers back there, you're not going to be too happy with the results. And you might be able to do that for a second or two, but not beyond that. Well, these poor folks, they're having that plastic tube jammed back there until they get extubated. They are not happy with that. You know, you get a trach patient in the ICU, they're pretty comfortable. They're okay. You have an endotracheal tube in the back of your throat. Oh no, not so comfortable. Now, beyond even that, we do a lot of other really painful and annoying stuff to these patients. They're sitting in an uncomfortable ED bed. Of course, they're going to be miserable. And since they can't talk, the only way they could express that is by trying to yank out their tube and flailing their arms around and generally making a ruckus. And if your treatment of that is to schlag them with some sedation and then paralyze them, that is not right. Beyond which, a lot of these guys wind up hypercapnic. That's the most miserable physiologic response a body could undergo. So, of course, all this combines to make the patients just look miserable. And we try to treat them then by making ourselves feel better by sedating them. Sedation doesn't do anything to fix those problems. Sedation only works on the central system, and it's just blunting their higher level perception of all their pain and discomfort. But it's still going on. It's going to lead to delirium. And these agents aren't really effective, so you have to use them in massive doses to get the response you want. So what should you be doing? Well, you should be starting off with your analgesia package. That should be step one. Pain first. Now, what do you use for that? I think your choice is pretty much morphine or fentanyl. At least in the United States, morphine or fentanyl. Both are fine. I like fentanyl a little bit better in the ED because it's a little bit of a cleaner agent. There's no histamine. It's a little more titratable. I like it. But if you have morphine, or if you're in another country, they don't have fentanyl as easily available, morphine's fine. Or maybe you're in another country and you have more stuff available, like some of the even shorter acting agents like sufentanil or, oh my God, like remifentanil. But forget it all. Let's not go into that depth. Let's just say you got morphine or fentanyl. Those are your basic pain choices, and you optimize them. Now, if you were a really clever doc, if you really cared about your patients, you do what the anesthesiologists do. And what they do is, before they even stick the tube in, they give their RSI sedation med, and they give a big slug of pain med. So they give some propofol and some fentanyl, or they give some etomidate and some fentanyl, in addition to their paralytic agent. And then the pain control is starting right from the get-go. But all right, let's say you didn't think about that. You don't want to add more complexity to your intubation. Great. As soon as that tube goes in, you push some morphine or you push some fentanyl. Now, when those RSI meds wear off, you already have a comfortable patient, not a crazy patient. I'm going to put show links with all the dosings of these agents, both fentanyl, morphine, the drips, how you'd use them. It's all there for you. It's in the show notes. Go to blog.mcrit.org. All right, so you got a slug of pain medication in. Now, I would tell you, you start the patient on a drip. Now, the reason I say that is not because a drip is any more effective than intermittent bolusing of an agent like morphine. But the thing is, we're in the ED, we're not in the ICU, and we have a tendency to get distracted by the gunshot wound that comes in after we intubate our patient, and you might not be at that bedside for quite a while. Now, if you have a protocol in place where you could just start them on the drip and your nurses could titrate that drip, wow, this patient's going to be very well taken care of in terms of their pain. If you're doing intermittent bolusing and the nurses are distracted as well, you're going to have a patient that's going to be really uncomfortable for periods of time. So I like a pain drip on board. Start up a fentanyl drip after the intubation, we are good to go. Even if it's not optimal dosing, they're going to be getting a good basal level of pain meds. Now, can you just give intermittent bolus of morphine? Sure. If you want to give 6, 8, 10 milligrams every couple hours or so as the patient needs it, that'll work. But honestly, I don't think we're in the right environment for that to be optimal. If you do have them on a drip and you find yourself up, if you find yourself titrating up the drip, you'd probably do yourself a favor by also giving the patient a little bolus to go along with it. Because just that up titration doesn't really get you where you want to go. So I'll start my patients off at 1 microgram per kilogram of fentanyl, and I'll go up from there. And each time I go up, I give them a little bolus. I give them 50 micrograms or so, and boom, they are a comfortable patient. They're a patient that could communicate with you, even though they're intubated. You could ask them questions. They could blink their eyes. They're totally aware of their surroundings. That's what you get when you have a good opioid package on board after intubation. Now, we're in the ED. In the ED, it's not a fun place to be rotting, right? I mean, you don't want to be sitting down there for hours and hours, even though in most of the places in the US, at least, you will be. So a little bit of sedative makes some sense. Now, what do sedatives do? What most of your sedatives do is three things. And when we're talking sedatives right now, we're talking benzodiazepines, propofol, agents like that. Well, what they do is they give you hypnosis, They give you amnesia, and they give you anxiolysis. Those are the three things that sedatives do. Let's go through those. Hypnosis means you sleep. It's not some Svengali guy who's hypnotizing you. Anxiolysis is obvious. It takes away your anxiety. And then amnesia, you also understand. It's going to be an anterior grade amnesia from the time they get the med. All right, well, all three of these things sound pretty good to me in the ED. Now, there's a lot of reasons they might not be the best thing in the world in the ICU, because that hypnosis kind of screws up their sleeping cycle. The amnesia, probably not the worst thing in the world, but some folks would say it's good for them to remember. It keeps them on track on where they are in the world. And that anxiolysis, well, that sounds good. I mean, if we could just have some pure anxiolysis without the other two, that would be a pretty good deal for these ICU patients. And then at night, we'd want the hypnosis, and we want to retain normal sleeping patterns. That's going to cut down on the delirium. But in ED, you don't need to worry about that. You want the patient calm, take away their anxiety. You don't want them remembering all the evil stuff we do to them downstairs. And a little bit of sleep in the ED, I don't think is the worst thing in the world. So I add sedatives. I'm not doing that analgesia only from that Lancet study I told you about. That was more of a proof of concept for me. But I'm adding the sedation on as the bonus. And we talked about this before. Sedation is the bonus. The pain control is what matters. So how do you do that bonus? Well, if you could only start one drip, then your drip should be the pain control and the bolus med should be the sedative. So if you have them on a fentanyl drip and you come along every now and then and you give them a little slug of Ativan or Versed, well, all's well in the world. If you can start two drips, then start them up on a Versed drip, start them up on an Ativan drip, start them up on a propofol drip. All good by me. But remember, that's only in conjunction with the pain control. And remember as well, that agents like fentanyl and morphine, they have some pseudo-sedation along with them, by which I mean not your amnesia and not your anxiolysis per se, but they're going to make those patients a little bit sleepy. You've seen your heroin users. Those guys are nodding off all the time. And that's a pure opioid that gets metabolized down to morphine. So they're going to be sleepy just from your fentanyl if you titrate it right. You'll just need a little touch of the sedative agent, mostly for that amnesia and the anxiolysis. So that's my basic sedation package in the normal patient. Get my fentanyl drip on board, and then I can add on either Ativan pushes or a drip of Versed or propofol, and everything's swell. That is the basics. All right, now we're going to go through a few special situations. So the first special situation I see all the time is you have a hypotensive medical patient. Maybe they're septic. In fact, they almost always are septic, and their blood pressure is low, and you look at them and you say, wow, this guy's not comfortable at all, but I can't give him sedation. I can't give him pain control because his blood pressure is too low. Bull crap is what I say. What are you thinking? All right. There is no patient whose blood pressure is too low to be adequately sedated and have their pain controlled. And if you have a patient whose blood pressure is low, you put them on a pressor. Add the pressor on. The pressor will counteract whatever the sedation causes in terms of making the blood pressure worse. So do not ever leave a patient without pain control or sedation because of their blood pressure. Put them on an agent to fix their blood pressure as you're fluid loading them and doing all that good stuff, and get them on sedation and pain control. So you show me that patient 70 over 40 in the time you're loading the fluids on, you've intubated them, they're writhing around and miserable. And God, if you push a paralytic on that patient with no sedation, I will come to your ED, I will find you, I'll take you out back, and you will not be happy with those consequences. So what you do, you put them on a norepi drip, get their blood pressure up, you start them on the fentanyl drip, you add on your sedation. Probably in these guys, if they're hypotensive, I like the fentanyl, like I just mentioned, because it doesn't have the histamine release. And I'll probably put them on a benzodiazepine because propofol has negative inotropy and it has vasodilation, probably in excess of the benzos. So I'll start them on a Versed drip, or I'll give them a slug of Ativan. And I am quite happy to do that with the pressor agents on rather than leaving them without the pressor agents and no sedation. All right, so that was special situation number one. Special situation number two. Delirium tremens patients. And we've spoken about this in the past. There was a whole podcast on it. I'll put it in the show notes. But just to quickly reiterate, these folks need to live something that's going to hit their GABA channels. So this is a special situation where sedation takes precedence. I'm still always going to have them on pain control. I get a synergistic effect. It makes my agents work better. But these folks need to be on, to my mind, a propofol drip. Why propofol? Well, because the way they got intubated in my ED is they failed the benzos, which means they got between 200 and 400 milligrams of diazepam before I intubated them. And that would be equivalent to about 160 of Ativan total. Now, I don't like Ativan in the DT patients. We were using Valium. Listen to that podcast. You'll find out why. So these guys got 200 to 400 of Valium to get intubated in the first place. They've shown that that particular GABA receptor is not working for them. They need another activation of that channel. And for me, that's propofol. So I'll have these guys on a propofol and fentanyl drip. Now, in the United States, at least, we're out of propofol. It should be coming back soon, but right now we have none. So what do you do in those patients? Well, in those patients, I will have them on the fentanyl. I will have them on a benzodiazepine drip, probably a Versed drip. And then what you add to those guys is phenobarbital. Phenobarbital could also be used instead of the propofol for any patient, if you like. You might think it's a little easier in your particular hospital. You could even give them the phenobarb before you intubate them. I'll leave the protocol in the show notes. So that's special situation number two, DTs. They need high dose of GABA agents, preferably propofol or some form of phenobarb. All right, special situation number three. And this is for Mike, the flight medic who wrote me. Mike, I think you guys are doing fantastic work. Keep on listening to the show. So Mike wrote, he's like, can you give me a little bit more information about the sedation needs of the neurocritically ill patient, particularly head bleeds? He does a lot of interfacility transport of these head bleeds. Well, got a few things to say about that, and I've covered this a little bit in the subarachnoid podcast. You can check that one out. But you got a lot of issues on these head bleeds. Now, let's say these aren't trauma patients. This is just a spontaneous intracranial hemorrhage, maybe a subarachnoid. These guys, usually their blood pressure is normal to high, so you don't have the blood pressure issues. In fact, a lot of times you're trying to get the blood pressure down. Well, the way you handle that is by first optimizing your pain and sedation protocol before you add on a blood pressure agent. So for these guys, I'll get the fentanyl drip started right off the bat, just like always. And then the agent you want on these folks is propofol, because you turn it off and get a neuro exam. And that package of a nice pain control dose of fentanyl, so again, starting off 1 microgram per kilogram per hour after a bolus, and some propofol titrated just to pretty much a fairly low GCS. Now, in my normal patients, and I should have mentioned this, I will leave them spontaneously breathing. I will leave them rousable. In these head bleeds, I take them pretty far down. And you probably should move in your ED to using some form of sedation scale. And for me, that's RAS, the Richmond Agitation Sedation Scale. There's a few others out there. I like that one. It ranges from -5 to +5. I'll put it in the show notes. And that lets you tell your nurses, put this guy at -2, put this guy at -4. You now have an objective way of communicating your sedation titration. And nurses are happier because they don't like this vague titrate to effect stuff. They want you to discuss with them what the goals of care are. They want to be able to chime in. And that's how we have a good teamwork going. So that's what I really feel the sedation scales help. So on these guys, I'm going to take them low down because I want their metabolic needs of their brain to be nice and low, at least during this initial phase, at least during the first 24 hours. So fentanyl's on board, propofol's on board. Don't worry about overdoing it. Both of these agents, at least for the first 24 hours, can be turned off and they'll disappear fairly rapidly. One particular situation that, Mike, you might be dealing with is the question of whether these folks need intubation prior to transport or not. And in my mind, if there's any doubt at all about their ability to maintain or the possibility of them decompensating en route, you just intubate. And it's the easiest question in the world to answer. The answer is just always yes if you think about it. Now, here's why I say that. Because if you do it right, which means you put them on a fentanyl drip and you use propofol as your transport agent, then you haven't lost anything. When they get to the receiving center, you turn off the propofol, you leave the fentanyl on, and you let the patient wake up. And they'll wake up in about 10 minutes, right back to where they were. And you take a look at them. You ask yourself, well, how are they doing? And if they're looking at you and they're responding to questions by, you know, giving good nods of their head and blinks of their eyes and they could follow commands, you extubate them. You haven't lost anything. You're not leaving this patient permanently intubated because you intubated at the sending facility. You extubate them at the receiving facility. Now you had a safe transport. Mike doesn't have to try to intubate these folks in the helicopter, which I'm sure he's excellent at, but it's still not ideal circumstances. And they haven't lost anything. It's not like you've now committed this patient to be intubated when they wouldn't have been otherwise. I have a paper in press in the Journal of Emergency Medicine on ED extubation. You can check that out on the JEM website. All right, special situation number 4. What do you do on the hypotensive trauma patient? Very different than the medical patient after you intubate them. Well, this one is a little more complex. You got to be a little bit more of a thinking doc on this one because you got a lot of different goals of care all coming at you at once. Now, of course, you want to leave the patient comfortable, but you also need not to cloud the hemodynamics of the situation. So here's how I play it. I get my nurses to bring me a bunch of ketamine and a bunch of fentanyl. And if the guy was a belligerent drunk before we intubated them, that's not PC. If the gentleman was inebriated in a way that is not socially acceptable prior to intubation, then I have them bring me some Haldol as well. And now I got my little chemistry set in front of me, and I'll go to the patient, and whatever they're doing at that moment is going to determine what I'm going to add to the mix. So here's how it works. If they were inebriated, they get a little bit of Haldol, 5, 10 milligrams of Haldol, and that's my little baseline. And if they weren't, then I don't even need the Haldol. Now I look at their MAP, their mean arterial pressure, and if the MAP is above 65, I give a touch of fentanyl, 25 micrograms. And then I see what happens to their MAP, and I'll know within a minute or so. And if it's still above 65, I'll give another 25 micrograms of fentanyl. And I'll keep doing that until the patient starts getting comfortable. Now, let's say their MAP's below 65. Then I start adding on the ketamine, and I'll start with 10 milligrams or so, maybe 15. And I'll give that slow push on the ketamine, go over like 2 minutes or so. And I'll look at their MAP. And if their MAP goes over 65, now I can add on a little more fentanyl. And eventually, with the combination of the two, or if their blood pressure is okay, just the fentanyl, I got a nice, calm, pain-controlled patient. So that's how I handle the trauma. I don't start them on a drip until they get out of their period of instability. I just sit there and keep pushing either of those two agents until the patient's where I want. Eventually, you'll get a bunch of fentanyl on board. Eventually, you'll have 200, 300 mics in ED. That is a patient who is well set from a trauma intubation. They do not need any sedative at all. And in fact, I don't touch them with any sedatives when they're unstable. So it's a pure, we call it a cardiac anesthesia strategy. It's what the cardiac anesthesiologists do. They do a pure opioid anesthetic. Same thing here. And so if you get enough of your opioids on board, the patient doesn't need any sedation agents. The opioid is an endogenous sedation. Now, what about that amnesia? God, as much as we don't want them remembering the medical stuff, we definitely do not want them remembering all the trauma stuff we do with them. So if you wanted to slip on 1 or 2 milligrams of Versed, I got no problem with that whatsoever. But remember, it's just going in for the amnesia, not for the sedation. Now, what about the future? What does the future have for us on the sedation and analgesia front after intubation? Well, I know one thing the future has for us, and I'll probably be working on this myself, is ketamine drips for both pain control as an augmentation or a substitution for your opioid, or in higher doses as a full sedation and analgesia package. Ketamine, wow, an agent with so much potential. I've loved this drug since I was a resident. And I think it has a big role in the ED for sedation and analgesia. So that's in the future. Another future agent that's going to take the ED by storm when it goes generic is dexmedetomidine. I've spoken about this in the past, but this is another agent that has both sedation, disassociation, and analgesia properties. Great agent. I've been playing with this for a couple months now with a lot of different patient types, and I am just very happy with this med. In fact, if you took away everything, you just left me with ketamine and dexmedetomidine, I would be in good shape because they both have pain control and disassociation. I can use the one when the patient's blood pressure is low, I can use the other one when the patient's blood pressure is high, and we really got something going. So we pushed the time this week. I'm going to leave it there. I'm sure this is going to bring up questions. Send them to me or put them in the show note comments and I will answer them. Remember, you can put show topics on the sidebar of the website at blog.mcrit.org. And remember to sign up for the contest to win Darren Brown's book, Rapid Sequence Intubation, Rapid Sequence Airway, just by going to the sidebar of the website and clicking on the link. All right, we got a lot of exciting stuff coming on in the next couple weeks. I am very happy to be talking to you in 2010. I'm going to sign off now. You stay safe. And if you're in New York City, go play in the snow. Bye-bye now.